Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're watching and listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show. Today, we have our friend from Journey to Truth podcast, Tyler Koala, is here to share with us details about his newest book and other aspects of his research. And I've been really looking forward to this discussion. So without any further ado, Tyler Koala, welcome to the Cosmic Switchboard Show.
Thank you so much for having me here. I'm excited too. You know, as you know, my new book just came out, and it's been gaining some traction, and I really appreciate the opportunity to come on your show and talk about it and get into some of the topics that I wrote about, including, you know, other parallel timelines and stuff that I know that you were particularly interested in.
Yes. And first of all, apologies to the listening and viewing audience. My voice is kind of raspy at the moment. I'm just turning the corner on this bug. That's kind of laid me low the last few weeks. In the recent past, Tyler, I've had a MyLab project person, male variety, panel, and we talked about these very subjects, alternate realities, the fact that not only do we seem to operate at times in other alternate realities, but it seems that the controllers, whoever they are in these alternate realities, seem to have an awareness of us, abduct us every once in a while, and use us in their ops, in their reality. I mean, it's really a mixed bag. It's a lot more than just a secret space program. So take it anywhere you want us to. Tell us about the inspiration for the book and tell us about some of these experiences.
Right. So, yeah, I appreciate that. And you're spot on with everything you just said. And I can provide some real life examples on why I think that is the case. But the inspiration for the book was, you know, I just started kind of when I got into this awakening, before we even started the podcast, it was just kind of coming. Like people were telling me I should write a book just based on some of the stories I was telling them that happened to me, some of my experiences. And I just didn't feel like I had anything to write about. I kind of started writing some stuff down back then, and it didn't feel right to me. So I put it down, and I would journal stuff over the years, but it turns out that I just hadn't lived my book yet. I hadn't lived it. You know, all these incredible things were about to happen that I wasn't aware of at the time. And after I just so much of it started piling up, and I would tell more and more of these stories, and I would realize that this isn't happening to everybody. You know, everyone has their experiences, but not in the capacity that I was. And not that like I'm somebody special and that I felt like I wanted to, like, you know, the books, I tried very hard to make the book not about me, but I wanted it to be about these experiences and help people feel comfortable coming forward to talk about their own. And I was like, well, you know what? I'll be the one who gets ridiculed. And believe me, this book has already come with plenty of that because it's talking about stuff that's largely unprovable. But we have to start breaking into new territory if we're going to start to explain what's actually happening on this planet, because it is a multidimensional reality involving other timelines, parallel universes, parallel Earths, you know, time travel, portal technology, things that we don't think about when we talk about a secret space program. Usually we talk about like a physical 3D reality space program where, like, oh, this private sector has some advanced ARVs, alien reproduction vehicles, they're developing out, you know, outside of NASA and SpaceX. And that probably is the case. But when we get into the actual technology that's making these programs tick, the technology behind these alien reproduction vehicles, we get into something called dimensional shift technology, where it turns out these craft actually travel in another dimension. Therefore, they're flying time machines because they also traverse, they warp space and time when they travel. So we're getting into a whole new territory, and then you have to start exploring other dimensions. And then it leads you to quantum mechanics and the many worlds interpretation of quantum mechanics and superposition and the collapse of a waveform and single position. And there's actually scientific terms to explain this stuff, but a lot of it's still considered like pseudoscience or the woo. But people like myself and others who are experiencing these things and know better than there is actually something to it. And we need to start having serious conversations about it instead of throwing it in the sci-fi category. So my book is an ambitious approach at that, to try and connect, to bridge the gap that has been created through years of lies and suppression, right? So I want to bridge that gap and provide real life experiences that would indicate these aren't just dreams or hallucinations. I'm coming up with actual evidence that indicates that we are literally a multidimensional reality, and some of these private corporations are moving assets, us humans, through portal technology in many cases to other dimensions and timelines where these programs operate. And it sounds pretty crazy, but the evidence is there. I mean, there are documents, patents. I mean, it's all there. It's just not put on a silver platter for us. We have to connect those dots ourselves. So that's basically the book in a nutshell.
Yes, because at some point we have to start making, I don't know if educated guesses is the right term, inferences, assumptions. This is how science progresses. Ernest Rutherford came up with the, you know, the solar system theory of the nucleus. He postulated the existence of a neutron before his protege, James Chadwick, discovered it 10 or 11 years later. So we're presented, we have a certain set of data, and then we just have to like work with what we have, and we have to take experiential aspects into this as well. Anyone who's had an out-of-body experience or precognitive dreams, as I've had, knows right off the bat that time is not all it's cracked up to be, that consciousness exists outside of our body. So
right.
Your book is extremely timely, Tyler. So tell us about some of these experiences.
Yeah, absolutely. So the book is called, for those who are wondering, Bleed Through, Tales from Another Timeline. And it is very timely. Actually, I was getting, you know, messages from the universe, signs, whatever you want to call it, like to get this book out now. Like it was just like, so I had been sitting on it and suddenly it was like this urgency to get this out. And for whatever reason, I'm still figuring out, but it feels like it had to be now. And maybe something will happen on the world stage that will make that clear. Actually, something did happen. Right, like within the same few days I released the book, the White House made that announcement that they have technology that allows them to traverse space and time and annihilate distance. And basically, thank you for like proving my theory already days after my book is released. And I saw one argument that, oh, they're like, oh, they're not talking about time travel. He's talking about Zoom calls. Like, I was like, no, they're not talking about Zoom calls in the White House statement. I'm sorry. But, okay, so some of the experiences in the book, it starts off in really kind of in the astral realm, talking about dream warfare, essentially, and astral interference. I get into like the love bite stuff, the alien love bite stuff, all these things I've experienced. But in doing so, like in experiencing that, I realized that like a lot of these dreams, sometimes I felt like they weren't dreams. Like I felt like I was actually in another place. And sometimes I was lucid dreaming, able to control my body as an avatar, walk around, explore, fast forward, rewind. It was like this really weird thing that was happening. And that's how I actually learned how to navigate like this astral interference, because I could start to notice the subtle changes in that environment where these intruders would come in that would eventually attack me and it would end up in sleep paralysis. So I learned to navigate that, and it started becoming more and more real where I was being in the middle of the night, I would be taken and I would wake up in the back of a car and be brought to these buildings over in Southern Illinois. I recognized it was Illinois. I didn't know the buildings. And I was with these like black ops military group, for lack of a better term, I don't know. And I was taken into the basement of this facility and this whole thing happened. It's all in the book. But there was a few things that made it very real. Like I remember knowing I was in Illinois. I didn't know how. And then I also remember seeing a construction site whenever they were bringing me around to the back of the buildings into the basement. I remember it in great detail. I drew pictures of it. They explained it all in like the most vivid detail. And I remember seeing a construction site, and it was the name of the company that I used to work for, actually. And they were building a new Boeing facility. I found out later that this was a Boeing facility, and there was a Boeing drone plant that they were building. Anyway, so I woke up the next morning with this clear memory. It wasn't like a foggy dream or anything. It was so vivid, like as if I had just gotten back and nobody had time to wipe my memory. That's what it felt like. And I drew the pictures. I wrote it all out. I journaled it. I made some voice recordings because it was just mind-blowingly profound to me. And I woke up even like sideways in my bed in a way I would never even be sleeping. It was just real weird. So some time went by, and a friend and I were talking on the phone, and he brought up these experiences he thought he had as a child at the Boeing facility. Anyway, we connected dots, and I was like, Boeing. I don't know why that triggered something. I was like, those buildings were Boeing buildings. Got on Google Earth, looked up the Boeing facilities all around me, because there's quite a few, actually. And I found some in Southern Illinois, literally 42 minutes from my house. From the above view, I was like, that's them. I went to the street view. I was like, holy shit, they matched my drawings. I compared the drawings in the book to the photographs. 42 minutes away, like it's even reasonable distance to if I were taken in the middle of the night, you know, whatever. And then I drove there. I got in my car and drove there. I had to see for myself. Pulled into the site and I was blown away because I was like, this is supposed to be a dream. Like this isn't, I'm not supposed to go find these buildings from my dream. That doesn't make sense. And then when I was, I kind of got nervous. I was walking around on the site, taking pictures and stuff. And there's one subtle difference, which I'll explain why I believe this stuff, this happened potentially on another timeline or another dimension. I'll explain that in a minute. But the most telling indicator that this actually happened was when I was leaving the, parking lot, I saw a truck drive by with a dumpster, like a construction dumpster on the back. And it had the name of my old company on the dumpster. And I'm like, oh yeah, I remember now. I saw the construction site. And sure enough, I look over and there's the construction site. I was so focused on the buildings driving in, I didn't even see the construction site. And it was my old company. And I called some guys that I used to work for. And I was like, hey, what job is going on over here? And there was a Boeing drone facility. We're going to build drones, you know? And I was like, there's just no way. Like I could have like maybe explained away all of it, but to be down to the details of a specific construction site, like it's just so many things. But what was odd was the two buildings that I drove, that they took me to. In the memory I have, we were able to just walk between the buildings. There was no fence there, right? It was like the parking lot extended between the buildings. But when I got there, when I drove there, I was like, there was like this like AC unit type of thing with this fence and you couldn't drive between the buildings. Everything else matched, but that was different. And I was like, that's weird. Like how could all of these other things be accurate except for this one key detail that I vividly remember? There was nothing here. And then, you know, the awakening happens and the universe puts things in your path. And I came across a Project Camelot interview where Carrie Cassidy was interviewing this whistleblower that claimed that everybody that the planet Mars that everyone was remembering from the programs actually existed on another timeline in another dimension. And he said they used jump rooms, jump gate technology to get there. And the secret space program effectively exists in a higher density. So you might go to Mars in the third density and not see what people are claiming because you're literally in a higher dimension. So I thought, well, that makes sense because I wonder if that's kind of what happened to me when I was taken to the Boeing facility. What if it was another dimension or timeline? And then I started thinking about all the times I've astrally projected and left my house, but I would look down and I would see things that were different, like a tree would be there where it wasn't in my real life, or my neighbor had this row of bushes that they don't actually have, like just little subtle variances that really like it's the same place, but just these subtle things are different. And I think that's evidence. That's a perfect example of the discrepancies and the subtle variations we would find in a parallel reality or another frequency, whatever it is. And I know all this stuff sounds nuts, but you have to start asking yourself these questions and piecing it together. So that's what I did. And it led me down this whole rabbit hole. And I've had more experiences where I have gone and actually found those buildings as well. And I've had even more incredible recall. And I was like, I'm just going to start documenting this stuff. And my book is called Bleed Through, Tales from Another Timeline, because I really do believe that these memories are bleeding through from other realities. And I break it down in detail why I think that's the case.
A couple of points, and then definitely want you to continue. Lorena Smith, who I've had on my show a couple times, and I've known her for many years. It was her house that we used to do the reptilian stakeouts at in the high desert of Southern California. She was told by an element of naval intelligence that they've set up, essentially, entire installations in other realms, other dimensions. And they explained this to her, but she said, well, you know, I'm just a housewife from Apple Valley. How do I understand any of this? That's precisely why we're telling you this. In so many words, they told her because nobody's going to believe you anyway. But it had something to do with like a frequency shift, lack of a better term. One of my colleagues I've had on the show anonymously, he's had a lot of these alternate reality experiences. And sometimes he says there's bleed through into our reality where he'll be driving, doing a morning errand. And Like in an example, he'd look over to the right instead of the normal strip mall that he'd see there every single day, night, whatever. Now it's different. Now there's different stores he hasn't seen before, what have you. And this happened on a couple of occasions. And he keep driving because he had an appointment to make, come back and everything would switch back to normal. But on this one occasion, he set off one morning and the strip mall was different. So he had a little bit of time and he pulled into a parking lot, got out, and he went walking into and out of these different stores and interacting with the staff of establishments that should not be there in our reality, right? And so then he gets back in his car, leaves, comes back, everything is back to normal. And then I've also had a guy who's gone by the pseudonym Logan, similar case to yours, where he worked with a defense-oriented company here in our reality. But in these alternate realities, he was working for the same corporation, which unbeknownst to him, had all these secret weird science contracts with the government. And in this other reality, he had much higher rank in this corporation, interacted with some of the exact same people or counterparts that he does in this reality, but their roles and their personalities are slightly different in this other reality. And a quick point, you know, from my own experiences, when I found myself in these alternate realities, I too would notice these subtle differences, whether it's the architecture. And also, I think that there's an innate knowing at a DNA quantum level that you just know that you're not in your regular reality, that you're in some other alternate reality. And one of these places, and I'd like input from some of your viewers, because I know my viewers have heard this story before, but some of these military places I was taken to was up a winding mountain forested hill. You get to the top and there's a clearing and there's a big estate there. There's essentially a big mansion estate, and you go inside and it's run by military people, wearing, green BDUs. I instinctively knew they were Navy for some reason, but other times there would be like a civilian presence there. There was one individual who I call Jackie Chan, and he's this Chinese or Canadian American guy, tall for a Chinese guy, glasses, and he likes to surround himself with these mind controlled, beautiful women, right? He'll sit at this big, elegant dinner table with the chandelier, and he'll have all these women dress up in finery and pearls and necklaces and evening gowns, and he sit there at the head of the table and lord it over them. It's a number of women I've spoken to were taken to this place and had interactions with this guy, but I've always had the feeling that that facility, that estate, really is an offset from ours. It's not exactly in this reality, but please continue.
Yeah, no, you made so many points. Absolutely. The subtle variations, I think that's how you know. That's in you, like you said, at a DNA level, you just know you're not in your reality, right? And, you know, this gets into things also like Mandela effects. Like you were talking about seeing actually like driving down the road and seeing something you don't recognize or something different. Could be a Mandela effect, which I explain my theory on that in the book, and we can talk about that if you want. But sometimes I think, you know, right now what's happening is some of these timelines and stuff are collapsing and even converging and merging. And there's like a collective bleed through. But you're only going to notice it if you're aware of it, if you understand other multiple timelines exist, right? Otherwise, it's just going to not even be in your part of your reality. So people like us will notice those subtle variances. I'm like, I don't remember that gas station ever being named Rocket, because that actually happened to me recently. I'm like, when did that? That's the gas station down the street from my house suddenly has a new sign. Maybe they did it overnight. Maybe. I don't know. I never asked them, but just weird things you notice that you just question sometimes. And sometimes, you know, fundamentally, like, I know this was different. Or sometimes you don't even know what was different, but something's just different or off. And I don't think we should ignore that. I think like it's happening. Our reality is malleable, right? It's constantly changing, and trees are showing up where they weren't and stuff. But the average person, I mean, how many people are actually like situationally aware, especially when you're driving and stuff, you're focused on the road, your phone, whatever it is. And I started even doing experiments with people I knew. I'm like, I would have them like try to identify certain landmarkers on this road that they drive every day. And they can't, because you literally aren't paying attention to that stuff when you're driving. And I'm like, what's the, like, what sign is right there before you get to Denny's? Like, what does it say? You drive past it every day and 10 out of 10 people don't know what the sign says because
especially nowadays, with the Siri navigators. In the old days, we had maps and like the Michelin roadmap grid book.
Right. So people just aren't paying attention. So it's so easy for things to change around them and they wouldn't know. But then when you bring it to their awareness, like, oh, that's insane. That's crazy. Whatever. You know, so it would, I have to go back to, you mentioned going up the hill, a windy road to like this mansion, right? Well, part of my story talks, it involves this guy coming to my life who I believe was my handler. And this girl was put into my life at that time, who I think the whole relationship was prearranged and they were exploiting our connection and it was a whole targeting thing. And it led me to Australia where she lived. And the whole leading up to Australia, in Australia, was the most heavy targeting I've ever experienced in my life. Stuff that I've only heard about in the targeted individual testimonies, but it was happening to me. We rented an Airbnb in Australia. And first of all, when we typed in the GPS to get there, it took us an hour out of the way to a military base because guess what? We weren't situationally aware. We plugged in the GPS and we followed the blue line on the phone. We were talking and next thing you know, we're like, this isn't where we're supposed to be. And we were at some military base and I don't remember the name of it. We turned around, we pulled over, put in a new, put in the address again, and we were still an hour away. Somehow we just ended up an hour totally off course and we were still an hour away from our Airbnb. We don't even know what happened. To be honest, who knows? You can only speculate. But when we were leaving, like this jet like came and broke the hard deck and did this barrel roll right over our car. And it was like crazy, but suspicious. Anyway, then some guys started following us, like all these weird things. We ended up at the next, it said we were in this winding road in the middle of nowhere, woods on both sides. And it said, you've arrived at your destination. And there was no destination. We were virtually in the middle of nowhere. And we were like, what in the hell is going on? So then we re-put in the GPS, right? And it said we were still 45 minutes away. We've been driving for over 2 hours now. And we're still 45 minutes away. So then we finally get up to where our Airbnb is up on top of this mountain. We booked it on top of this mountain because of the beautiful view from the Airbnb website. We get to the base of the mountain and there's all this construction and stuff. And this guy stops us and we have to wait our turn because they have one lane closed on the mountain road, whatever. And we get up to the, we wind up the top of this mountain road and literally the sign at the top of it says military training ground. And we look at each other and laugh. We're like, what the hell is this? You know, did we book our Airbnb on a military training ground? And it turns out we did. We looked it up and absolutely, we were smack dab in this little town up on top of this mountain in the military training ground. It, nowhere on the website did it say anything about that. We thought maybe it said it and we missed it. And the whole time we were up there, we just kept saying how everything looked too perfect. It felt like a simulation. She kept saying, this is like a simulation. She goes, you know this, like, everything's just too perfect. And it really was really, really weird. Like the most beautiful house and like the landowners, they, like we were in a guest house and they were staying on property. And the people that owned the house also owned a local store. And like everybody, it was a small little town where like, it was almost like we were just led into this trap. And we experienced some of the most intense directed energy weapons while we stayed in that house to the point where the glass shower literally exploded, spontaneously combusted after I got out of the shower and had claw marks on my back that I couldn't identify the source. And I have pictures of it. I got out of the shower and my girlfriend's like, did you scratch your back in the shower? I said, no. Why? And she's like, come here. And she's like, look at your back. And I had these red claw marks down the center of my back.
Were they three straight parallel marks?
Yes. Yeah, three. And yeah, not even four, like if it was a human hand, it was three. And then that night, we go to bed and the shower literally spontaneously combusts and explodes in millions of pieces. And I actually, the night before that, I actually was getting hit with this energy weapon so hard, I was having a heart attack. And I'm not saying that lightly, like I was actually having this heart attack, right? But to bring the whole point back to what the point I'm trying to make is that this mountain town did not seem like it was in this reality, right? It was such a weird simulated reality. And we were constantly just like, something's weird about this place, but you couldn't tell. Like, it's like you can't necessarily identify it because maybe there's like this veil of illusion that keeps you seeing something that's not actually there. I don't know. But looking back on it, I would definitely say there was something way more to where we were staying or where we were led to than we that met the eye, you know, like kind of like what you were talking about. And I find it interesting that it's at the top of a winding mountain road, you know?
Yes. And I think there's two things, or probably more than two things. But for those of us and the aforementioned friend of mine who kept noticing the landmarks had changed during his normal morning errands, some of us seem to have a bubble in a way where because we've been on these ops, because we've been in these alternate reality ops, there is a tendency, a vulnerability, if you will, for us to kind of slip over at times. And I think combined with some places are naturally like that. It could be because some kind of major psychological scarring had occurred in that locale, a war, a massacre, whatever the case may be. Let me give you an example of where these stories kind of overlap. There's a place called Budrum, not too far from the Glasshouse Mountains in Australia. Very mystical place. There's a UFO corridor there. And this place called Budrum, some of the locals insist, and some of the people I've spoken to insist that there's like a roadside cafe where 90 times out of 100, you go in there and it's a normal cafe, right? But every once in a while, someone will go in there, a trucker or somebody will go in there. And instead of like normal, like roadside cafe staff, they're like elfish dwarves with like big white beards and caps and something you'd see right out of, you know, like a Hobbit movie or something. And the people that go in there to get, you know, whatever they want or to eat or drink whatever they want, normally, like to them, it's normal. It's like that's who the proprietors are, right? But when someone comes in from the outside, like say from our reality, they go, what the F? You know, I'm being served by these elfish dwarves right out of Lord of the Rings or something. And then you have these other places. Well, a classic example is that underground facility in El Yunque, Puerto Rico, where according to Jorge Martin's research and what his colleagues are telling him, it's not just an underground alien base. There is a strong feeling amongst the people investigating that site that that underground base leads to another dimension entirely, right? And so it's a fudge factor. So, okay, you look around, well, I'm an underground base. But does that necessarily mean you're in an underground base in our reality? Because these beings, a lot of them, and we're not even talking about the deep black, you know, weird science projects. We're just talking about other beings that have this ability to alter their density and their frequency, which allows them to come in and out of our reality. Right. Bill Hamilton was taken on board a craft at near the black, well, it used to be the black mailbox by Groom Lake, and he was examined by a tall gray while his wife Pam was pulled onto a van by military types. But anyway, the tall gray was calming Bill down because he was having, like you just described, pretty much a heart attack because being abducted by a tall gray, right? So he was calming Bill down. Bill was inclined on a table set at like this kind of a degree. And then the alien telepathically told him, do you know that your military is experimenting with time travel at this facility being Area 51? And secondly, what the alien described to him is, imagine two bubbles conjoined side by side, but each bubble pulses or resonates at a slightly different frequency. So although there seems to be contact between the two, they're essentially two different realities. And so the alien said that, yeah. So the aliens
book cover, yeah.
Wow. So the alien said to him, this explains in part the missing time and the amnesia, because when we're over and above the mind wipes and the externally imposed amnesia, our neurology is momentarily in another timeline, another frequency. It's just not synced up to operate in such a way. I'm sure that in a certain altered state of persona, we can quite comfortably, actually. But in an abduction type scenario, our neurology and our brain waves are operating in our frequency. Suddenly we're shunted at another frequency. It's kind of a systems overload. So I just wanted to throw that out because it confirms everything that you said, that, you know, you get to this mountaintop and you see the linkage between the navigator on the phones leading you to this place. So there must be some interlinkage between this overarching kind of alternate reality system and the digital devices set up in our reality. But please continue.
Yeah, it's almost like, you know, I'm just thinking about this now, but like almost like we were intentionally led astray to buy them time to set up this place for us, right? Before we got there. I wonder, you know, you can only speculate, but as far as the realities bleeding over, like that was the cover of my book I was showing you, and that's very much the case. Like you have these parallel realities, and where the overlap is, that's where the bleed through occurs. And that convergence, that's where the portals exist. And then you can have other overlaps within that, and like worlds within worlds. And like, that's kind of what we're looking at if you zoom out. And I think we're at a point now where the consensus reality is beginning to dissolve. And all these, like I said, these realities are bleeding through, these parallel realities. And it's kind of confusing. And people might call them glitches in the matrix, Mandela effects, whatever the case is. But there's some time anomalies happening that might actually easily be explained, but not through modern science, conventional science, right? Just the Black world, the Black private community, right? They understand this stuff in great detail and have the ability to traverse time and space and dimensions and communicate with other dimensions and even access them, you know, in a real physical sense. So this is something that the public, I think, has to catch up to, right? And this mainstream UFO hearings and this disclosure that's happening, it's still so surface level. Like they're trying to erase history. I'm like, we did this, we talked about this literally 70 years ago, 50 years ago. And like, we've only made it this far, you know, come on. It's hilarious, actually. It's like a mockery. It's like a slap in the face. But we're so far beyond that, that if, like, I think somebody said a quote one time, and I absolutely love it. They said, the truth is so insane, is so unbelievable that it will discredit itself because people just won't be able to connect the dots that is the reality and not the illusion that they've been living. And what's even more of a magic act is actually trying to fit these new technologies into the old narrative, right? That's even harder than trying to just explain the truth. But I mean, there's real things we have to start considering, and that's time travel. Like, and what was I going to say? So you're familiar with Sean David Morton, the Sands of Time material, where he talks about the books lay out a man's 40-year experience working for the shadow government and the origins of time travel. And it's allegedly a true story, based on a true story. And there's a whole, you know, backstory on how that information made its way to Sean and how he turned it into a sci-fi novel. But it's really a true story. And I know, thankfully for him, we have all this information because he has now passed away. And it might be due to the releasing this information. But if any of that stuff was true, it fills in the gap in history that explains the origins of time travel and how we even came to a point in modern reality, that modern man came to a point where we were able to develop these technologies and start experimenting with that. And what he explains is that in the early experimental phase, they were tearing holes in space-time and quite literally allowing in entities and UFOs from other dimensions. There was a literal bleed through, and that explained, according to the books, the UFO flap in the 40s and 50s. All these UFOs started showing up is because they were experimenting with time travel haphazardly, not understanding the technology, and they were ripping holes everywhere. And these things were just bleeding through, and our reality was coming, like becoming like Swiss cheese, like it was becoming porous, you know?
Yeah, if nothing else, some of these other beings from other realities would want to investigate what the hell is going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a dimensional rift, actually. If you look up a dimensional rift, that's exactly what it is. But, you know, they explain like the Philadelphia experiment that was very much a time travel experiment that ripped a hole and like allowed these things through. The Nazi Bell, same thing. It disappeared above the top secret facility in the hills of Germany in 1945. And it reappeared in Kecksburg, Pennsylvania in 1965, the Kecksburg UFO incident. It crashed, a bell-shaped UFO crash landed into the woods, and the paperclip scientists that were on the UFO crash retrieval team knew exactly what it was. Like the Americans didn't know, but the German scientists that were part of that team, they knew this is the Nazi bell. It didn't disappear. Time traveled 20 years into the future and somehow ended up in Kecksburg, Pennsylvania from Germany, according to the Sands of Time. But then again, what happened was it was this tear in our reality. And they were also experimenting with like jump room technology and all this stuff. And they didn't have a way to like basically contain the time field, right? So they couldn't maintain the integrity of the timeline at first. So they were, maybe they would have success, but detrimental things would happen. They would create like a wormhole or something. And I don't think the implications of that were, they just weren't understood or realized until many years later. And then it described they actually built what we now know as a HARP facility, but they were trying to put a frequency net over the planet, if not at least a country, to seal up these holes because they didn't know how to fix the problem, right? And a byproduct of that was weather manipulation. So it's a fascinating history. If all that's true, then we, you know, we have to start to take it seriously and consider like, okay, we just really don't know what we don't know. And until you dive deep and research these topics, you'll never understand. And you'll just keep asking your same questions. You know, I see these radio shows and podcasts all the time, like talking about the Mandela effect and come to the same conclusion every time. Oh, who knows? Who knows? That's weird. I'm like, no, we do know. And there's piles of information about what's causing, what's creating these Mandela effects. And it's time anomalies and timeline deviations and these temporal invaders and all these things that are happening. And there's explanations for it, but the cognitive dissonance won't allow people to that be a satisfiable conclusion, right? It doesn't. So they just have to leave it open-ended every time. And like, we're literally blank slating ourselves at this point.
Well, the problem is they have to filter it through the prism of their own understanding. And if right. one is brought up in this kind of Newtonian kind of physics and the reductionist model of everything, none of it's going to, not only is none of it going to make sense, but it's going to be in the woo ridicule category. That's why when we do our research, we step back, we look at the behavior of things, just like physicists do. We look at the behavior of things. You may not have the exact evidence looking through a microscope at what's going on, but you can see the after effects of, well, something happened, obviously, right? Created this effect. Now let's work backwards and see how it happened. If you look at the behavior of some of these cryptids, for example, and that has to be part of so-called disclosure. Disclosure is meaningless and a sham if we don't talk about all these Sasquatch and dogmen and other beings, many of whom have metaphysical capabilities. If we don't talk about them, then disclosure is a sham. But if you look at some of the known perceived capabilities of some of these cryptids, they have the means, and according to a lot of the Native American elders and First Nation elders around the world, they say that at least some of these cryptids come from other realities, that they know where the doorways are. Once again, the openings from their reality in our reality, they come in our reality for a feed or whatever, right? But yep. because the laws of physics, quote unquote, are not quite the same from where they're at compared to where we're at, where we're at, we know that we're made up of atoms. So we're mostly made up of empty space, Tyler. That's what a lot of these rigid mentally, they can't understand that where consciousness goes, matter can go, right? Right? So what these beings of all stripes have managed to do, many of them, they managed to be able to shift not only their consciousness, but an avatar, their physical body, quote unquote, into our density, hunt deer or some other game, slay it, either consume it here or bring it back into their reality. So they're able to densify themselves to accommodate existence and the ability to operate in our reality. And I'm also reminded of what Bill Hamilton was told by one of his sources, a guy that was a sergeant in the U.S. Marine Corps, took part in a crash retrieval off of Vietnam in 58. He said on board that particular craft, they retrieved it, strapped it onto the deck of the USS Oriskany aircraft carrier, hauled it back to Naval Air Station Alameda near San Francisco. What they found on board that craft was what they referred to as a transspatial resonator. It's a device that allows the occupants of that craft to alter the density of the craft and all the occupants so it can comfortably merge, sync up with, and exist in another reality. So some of these craft are not only coming from other worlds in our plane of existence, other planets, they're coming from other universes, other realities entirely. And there's a lot of bleed through going on now more than ever. So people have to be able to think beyond like this nuts and bolts kind of mentality, because otherwise they're never going to catch on. And it's fine if they want to do that. Just don't try to cut the rug out from people like us who are living this and trying to figure it out. You know, quick point in one of my experiences or a number of my experiences. I think a lot of times, Tyler, from an oversold perspective, it's not that we're utilized by controllers or handlers in our reality or another reality. That happens quite often for some people. But also there's an element where from an oversold perspective, because we have these innate capabilities, we of our own accord do this ourselves. I've had many dreams, quote unquote, but they weren't dreams where, let me give you a typical scenario. It's nighttime. I'm floating down to the surface. I'm standing upright, but floating down. It's one of these things again. And I just casually drop down at terra firma. I can feel the ground beneath my feet. And I just walk along and I know I'm in some other reality. And it could look like a quaint English or European village with cobblestone streets, whatever the case may be. Other times I might wind up in a teeming city and people all over the place. And I'll say, well, this looks like Los Angeles, but it's not Los Angeles, not my Los Angeles. This is like another Los Angeles, right? And when I get in there and I'm somewhat lucid, okay, I'm going to go in operator mode. Hopefully no one will recognize me as being an outsider. You know, on one occasion, Tyler, I followed this crowd into an upstairs room from the street level. It turned out to be a courtroom. And I sat there in a courtroom for what to us would be hours of linear time, just sitting there in the gallery observing a court case. But it was not our reality. It was somewhere else. But for whatever reason, I don't know what lesson there was to be gleaned from all this, but I was there. I walked inside. I sat amongst them. I observed this court case for hours and then left.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it sounds like we're having similar experiences because there's a number of things like that occur. And you just, you know, I find myself in cities or cityscapes where there's signs with other languages that I've never even seen before, like nothing of Earth, right? And then just many other little scenarios like that. But going back to altering the density of the room, I had that happen one time, actually, or the density of the reality, that technology, what do you call it, interspatial something?
A transpatial resonator.
Transpatial resonator. Okay. So I had an experience with what I believe was an inner Earth being, and it's a whole long story, but I was consistently trying to communicate with an inner Earth being a few years ago in 2018. I had kind of become obsessed with it because I was super into it. And then I was listening to these testimonies and reading these books and like how people were having a communication, like telepathic communication. So anyway, I was like setting the intention, doing this every night. And finally, I had this being show up in my basement, and it's a whole story. I'll skip it because it's a long story, but I'll just get to the meat of it. This being showed up, but when she showed up, she was phasing into my house, and she was like semi-translucent, right? I could see her, but and only like the top three quarters of her body too. Like she wasn't fully physical, but she phased in, and I was like staring at this very real woman. But what happened when she did that, when she showed up, the entire density of the room changed. I didn't come to this conclusion until after the fact, but the entire density of the room changed and I couldn't move. I was like frozen in this mild paralysis. It wasn't like I was being attacked, but I literally physically couldn't move my body. And I was like standing there. For one, I was startled that I was even seeing this. So I was like, you know, frozen in fear kind of, but I wasn't scared of her. And for two, I just genuinely couldn't move. And she phases in and gives me this whole telepathic download and this message and basically tells me like, you're not ready yet. Like, you know, you can, yes, it's possible to communicate with us. And this is like us showing you that it's possible, but you came to Earth to do all this other stuff. And like, basically gave me a download of my mission. And, you know, I had given up on everything in my life to go focus on communicating with inner Earth beings at the time, because I just wanted to escape this reality. It sounded like fun. And I just wasn't focusing on anything that I should have been focusing on. So it was this whole thing. She disappeared and the density, I could move again. And I never understood why that happened until years later. I was like, oh, I think she had to alter the density of our reality to even make conditions suitable for her arrival, right? For her to even appear in as much as she did. And she still wasn't fully physical, but it was just enough to show me like, yes, like this is me. I'm real. And like, we exist and you can do this, but you have work to do. You came here for a reason. And connecting with us is secondary to your mission, essentially.
That reminds me of a story. Thank you for sharing that. Before we started, I talked about a friend of mine who laid down in one of the crypts in the Great Pyramid. I don't remember if it was the king or the queen's chamber. And then she looked up when she was laying there, and she saw these ancient Egyptian guys looking down at her in complete puzzlement, right? Well, that gal was Helga Moro, who was a world-class psychic, as fate would have it. She and her husband, Gary, had the exhibition table right next to me at a conference in Philadelphia, circa late 90s sometime, and then we got to become good friends. Well, Helga's backstory is interesting because her father was a world-class geneticist. No, her father's friend was a world-class geneticist. Her father was Dr. Frederick Augustus Kepars, who was involved in these weird science projects. I forget what aerospace corporations, it was with Douglas or what was then Martin Marietta. But her father had worked with helping to assimilate human-looking aliens into our reality, into our society. So she was very much born into the program. And there was a whole long backstory about how her father was deemed at some point to be a liability to the system because he was sharing information with his daughter, Helga. She was like 19, 20 years old at the time, trying to teach her things about magnetism and things. And her father came home from work one day just emotionally distraught, just saying that everything, history is a lie, everything is a lie, what we're taught in schools is a lie. He basically had a breakdown. So he was deemed a liability. They faked his death, and security people were the pallbearers at the funeral. Nobody knew who these pallbearers were. Nobody knew who, set the whole thing up, basically. So they killed him, but they didn't allow the family to see the body. So fast forward some years down the track, Helga is laying in bed, and Helga is a world-class psychic. That's another thing I forgot to mention. She's had a lot of weird time travel type experiences, what have you. And she says that one night she woke up and there was a bright bluish light. You hear this a lot in this context, this bluish or bluish white light appeared in her room. And there was her father inside the light. And he told her, "I escaped. They faked my death, but I had the means to escape our reality. But I had to because they were going to kill me. I had to, protect my family. So only call on me if you really need to. If you really need me in some kind of dire emergency, reach out, telepathically call out to me. I'll come to you. But this is as close as I can get, basically." So he's talking to her, probably sitting in some facility somewhere in another reality. And he's telling his daughter, "Look, I'm not really dead. My death was faked. I'm here. But I had to escape," basically. So point of relevance is this happened when Helga was in her 20s. And also when she was a teenager, her father took her to an underground base beneath Golden, Colorado, right? Because like I said, he was in the aerospace corporations. He was a personal friend of John von Neumann. In fact, when she was a little girl, because she spoke German at an early age, she would be on the stairwell trying to eavesdrop on discussions between her father and John von Neumann. They had to switch to Dutch, right, to another language so she wouldn't hear, right?
Wow.
So her father worked with aliens, worked with John von Neumann, who we know at some level was involved with the Montauk Project. But if taken at face value, and Helga has no reason to lie about these things, her father had escaped to another reality decades ago in order to get away from, the security people in this reality, just to, round out that point. Yeah, they have this means to project themselves into our reality. Please continue.
Yeah, well, it reminds me of the Sands of Time story. The guy who gave Sean David Morton that material moved on. He didn't die. He moved on, time traveled or moved to another reality, whatever, which I found very interesting. But also talking about military people, right? And then bringing this back into our reality. So last October, I went to Sedona to speak at a conference, and I was staying with a friend of mine. I didn't even know the person I was actually going to be staying with. This is all divinely orchestrated. I was found myself staying at this 85-year-old man's house who was a quantum physicist that worked 40 years in the shadow government. And 40 years must be this time frame, because this is all these guys, they work 40 years and then 40 and out, right? So he worked 40 years in the shadow government. He's 85 years old and would be the most insane whistleblower if he would talk on camera, but he refuses to talk on camera. I was able to interview him, but only by memory, right? And I asked him all these questions. And he told me he was brought in. He was kind of brought through, fast-tracked through the military, and he tested out into the private sector. And they have special tests to look for whatever they're looking for, right? And then he was brought in, this was years ago, to perfect the dimensional shift technology that they were using, experimenting with the Philadelphia experiment. And he said the reason those guys got frozen into the ship, the USS Eldridge, is because they lacked a psychic navigator. He said you can't teleport anything, even your own body, unless you can remote view where you're going so you don't end up in a solid object. And he told me that him and a few other guys, part of their military training was to go spend 9 months with the Aboriginals in Australia, Africa, and Easter Island each, 9 months each. And they couldn't come back until they knew how to teleport their physical body. And I found this fascinating, and I asked why. He's like, well, the Aboriginals all do it all the time. And he said they have natural portals. And he was explaining to me, living with them, he goes, if there's a threat coming, the whole family will just go through a portal and disappear from our reality. These Aboriginals, right? These, what we think are these dumb natives, not like, I don't think that, but you know what, that's what we're told. And so he said, like, they use portals all the time, just like the Sasquatch do. And he said they also can physically teleport their body, but he said they can't just do it for fun. Like, you have to have like the purest intention. You have to be so in tune with your body and your heart and in alignment with like, with your soul. And like, that's the only way you can actually tap into the true human potential. If you have any nefarious motive, it actually won't work, he said. So anyway, they literally had to train these guys how to literally get into a meditative state, remote view location, and physically dematerialize and rematerialize somewhere. And he explained it as if it was matter-of-factly possible. And he said the reason they had to do that was because they were recovering these downed UFOs that had no doors and they didn't know how to get inside of them. So they literally had these guys train with the Aboriginals to learn how to teleport so they can teleport inside the craft and see what was inside. And he said they were successful. But, and he ended up learning a number of things about their technology, but the dimensional shift technology that the Philadelphia experiment was using to shift that ship, to time travel that ship, right? He said it started off, the technology back then was the size of a large room, like a classroom. And he said by the time he exited the program, it was down to the size of a cell phone or a credit card, and you could put it in your pocket and you could literally be walking and push a button and you would shift out of this reality. And he said you could go inside of a house and shift an entire house out of a reality and then shift it back. He said it's like, it's literally down to as quick as a push of a button. And he said every spacefaring vessel in the secret space program uses this technology to travel. And this is what renders them invisible, right? Because they're quite literally shifting into another dimension to travel. He was telling me about all the ETs that he worked with and just amazing stuff and other planets that he had gone to via portal technology and stuff, all matter-of-factly. And it was just mind-blowing. I'm literally having this conversation with this 85-year-old guy who refuses to talk on camera. And I'm like, man, if you like, you could have the greatest testimony ever, but he wasn't interested. And you know why? Because he told me he still had access to some of the underground facilities and some of these portals and even craft. And he even claims like this this UFO was gifted to him by one of these extraterrestrial races that he had got to know. And he told me that, you know, about that too. But had he spoken publicly about it, he thinks all of that would have been revoked and he wouldn't have had access anymore and he would have been cut out of the loop. And I think that was more important to him than actually coming out publicly.
Well, that's his insurance policy, because he might have an inkling of what's coming down the pike, because, you know, this just came out. It's interesting that we're having this conversation now, the timeliness of it, because Catherine Austin Fitz just had a discussion with Tucker Carlson, and she was dropping some mega truth bombs about the underground bases and what have you. And you see, that's where the twain meets, because this other civilization that's developed parallel to ours has the means to do all these things. But because we're considered unwashed plebs and stupid and superstitious, we're not allowed this information. even though ironically some of us are having these, you know, very same experiences. This is where we need to go as far as, you know, a greater understanding of what's going on. Because it's clear to me that the powers that be know that there are going to be some celestially driven cataclysms, that they're coming back. The seismic activity and volcanic activity is going through the roof. It may not have been the only reason why they're building all these continuity of government underground facilities and what have you, but it's clear to me at least that the powers that be have an understanding that something really big is coming down the track. And so with their means, their ability, at least some of them have the means to either to try to ride out the storm underground or go to another reality entirely. Not just go off world, but go to another reality.
Sure, an insurance policy. Or like I said, the aboriginals, they would just walk through a portal until the danger, until the coast was clear, right? And then they could hide their, he said they would, some of the like warriors would literally hide their family in the portal, and then they would stay in this reality and like ward off whatever it was. But, and he was explaining consciousness in a way like it was the key component to all the technology, right? And the remote viewing, he said, you got a remote view. Like that is first and foremost, if you can't accurately remote view, you can't even begin to think about teleporting and all the other things that come with it, including time travel. And I was asking him, okay, like some of these craft and stuff that you're talking about, like this, how long does it take them to get to Mars, let's say? I said, will it take them 3 weeks to get to Mars, or what would that look like? And he says, well, there's many factions in the private sector that all are operating at different levels of technology. And he goes, it's all based on belief. So if one group believes it has to take them 3 weeks to get to Mars, then it's going to take them 3 weeks to get there. But if this other group over here understands that you can get there in an instant, then they can get there in an instant. It's all a matter on what you believe in. And then your technology will conform to your belief. And so he said, if you believe it has to take you 3 weeks to get to Mars, and your ship is going to take you 3 weeks to get there. And it's just, that's the matter of fact. He said, that's just the way it is. And I found that fascinating because I agree with that. Like, that's what we're seeing right now. Like, if, you know, people say seeing is believing, but it's actually the other way around. Believing is seeing. So like your thoughts can literally create your reality. And that gets into consciousness in this whole other conversation, but it all plays hand in hand.
Yes, and it ties in with what Ben Rich had spoken of before he passed away. I think he spoke to Tom Keller, a MUFON aerospace consultant, that all time and space is one, right? So anything you can imagine, we can already do, he said. And getting back to the Aborigines, there's some great books about the subject. Mutant Message Down Under, the gal who wrote that book was... they really went out of their way to discredit her and try to make her look crazy. But the kind of psychic phenomena she described living amongst the Aborigines in the Outback, she was with the main group of the Aborigines. And then one of the Aborigine elders got a telepathic message from a hunting party. And the hunting party said, well, and what they do is they send out this message into the ether and they ask if there are any animals nearby that want to continue their spiritual journey, but by offering themselves up as food to the Aborigines. And then when they get a volunteer, you know, lo and behold, there's the animal, and then they kill it. And then, you know, the animal, they bless it and it continues a spiritual journey. Well, they got a telepathic message back from the hunting party. We got a big kangaroo, but it's too heavy. We can't carry it. Is it okay if we cut the tail off to make it a little lighter? Telepathic message back. Sure. Go ahead. Cut the tail off. In the meantime, we'll dig a big pit, you know, get a fire going. So by the time you get back, we'll be ready to, you know, start to prepare the, you know, the meat. Right. And she's just observing all this. And she's being told by one of the Aborigines, yeah, this is what's going on. We got a message from the hunting party. She's thinking, okay, well, I'm just going to roll with it. Sure enough, after a while, a hunting party comes back with a big kangaroo without a tail. And they already got the pit going. Right. And then they whack it in there and then they cook it. And then there was another story. I forget the name of that book, but it was a guy who was dying of cancer. And he was very skeptical and very negative, but he was encouraged to go live amongst the Aborigines. So he left America, went to live with a particular Aborigine group, and, you know, went in Rome, et cetera, eating live grubs like they were, et cetera, et cetera. And then he realized that they're telepathic. Because a common stereotype many people have of the Aborigines is they're so stupid when they're amongst themselves, they don't even talk to one another. Well, they're talking telepathically, for one thing. Because he lived with this group, and he looked at a little Aboriginal girl, and he realized for the first time the physical beauty of the race and how you know, cute and beautiful this little girl was. And he thought to himself, wow, she really is pretty. No sooner did he get that thought out of his head than the little girl looked up at him and smiled. And another quick story, Evan Strong is a friend of mine. He lives up by Byron Bay. He and his father, Stephen Strong, have done a lot of research. They thoroughly debunked the whole out of Africa theory that mankind first came from there. If anywhere, they came from Australia, right? But anyway,
exactly.
He was contacted by a guy who was raised on a Native American reservation. When this guy was a boy, see, to this day, there are these intertribal ceremonies that take place. I'll tell you one of the names of these locations in the break, but what some of the Hopi and what some of the other Native Americans do, they go into a portal at their end in America, and they pop up in a mountain top here in Australia, probably one of a number of places, and they have these intertribal ceremonies with the elders over here, right? That's just what they do. There's eyewitnesses have seen, I've seen these Native Americans up there doing these ceremonies. I couldn't figure it out, right? Well, that's why. They stepped into a portal over there, and they pop up over here. So this Native American guy reaches out to the Strongs, and he said, as a young boy, he was brought by his tribal elders to Australia. He lived among the Aborigines. They taught him this breathing exercise, right? And this training lasted for months. And then one fine day, they deemed him ready. They went into this state of controlled breathing, and then eventually they teleported into another world. They brought this little boy with them. They taught the technique. They teleport to another world. Lo and behold, they get to this other world and there are Aborigines there, right? They look just like the Aborigines here, but it's another world, another planet. I don't know if another dimension or what, right?
Yeah.
So, they brought him back. And then years later, this guy is grown now. He's an adult. He comes back to Australia and he meets some of the elders and they start, there was an understanding they had to train him some more, right? And then the Native American guy says, I know, Father, when I was a boy, my elders brought me here and they had me learn from people such as yourself. So thank you for welcoming me back, basically. And he left a cryptic note in his email to the Strongs, I think we should stay in touch,
Right.
So anyhow, we reached the end of the fascinating first segment with our guest, Tyler Koala. Tyler, can you let everyone know how they can find your book and how they can find your work online?
Yeah, absolutely. And I maybe in part two, we can continue what we were just talking about because I have something to add to that. But if anyone's interested in my book, it's called Bleed Through Tales from Another Timeline. And you can find it on Amazon. Just type in my name and the title on Amazon and it'll take you right there. I'll send you the link too, James. And Journey to Truth podcast, everything that we do, including our documentaries and conferences and all that stuff, can be found at Journey to Truth online. And you can find everything we do there all under one umbrella. So I encourage people to go over there, give us a like and sub because, we've been under heavy censorship and we've had to start over a few times. So your support means the world to us and it's what keeps us going. So thank you so much.
Very quickly, tell us about your upcoming gig. You got a conference coming up, right?
Yeah, May 12th. May 12th through the 15th in Grafton, Illinois. It's a disclosure conference. It's our fourth year. And we just basically take people that we've interviewed and give them a chance to come and speak on stage. And we have a big vacation getaway. It's not at a typical conference. It's at this lodge out in nature. And there's cabins and trails and hills and Sasquatch. And it's right on the river and camping. It's just like a little summer camp getaway / disclosure fest type of thing. And you can find the tickets at Journey to Truth online. Rebels of Disclosure, May 12th through the 15th. And if you can't make it in person, it's all going to be live streamed and brought straight to your doorstep. And you can get a live stream virtual pass for $66 for the whole 4-day event.
And to our dear listeners and viewers out there, if you like what we do, if you believe what we do, please go to thecosmicswitchboard.com, sign up, become a member, and we'll see you at the top of the next segment.